All right, guys. I think we're ready to get started here. I'm Steve Greenberg. I'm a member of the Microsoft Access engineering team, and you're at a session called Taming the Beast. So my question to you, quick show of hands, how many of you work in organizations that have Access databases in use somewhere in the organization? Awesome. And how many of you work in IT organizations that are at least nominally responsible for some of the data usage in your organization? Okay, so you guys have come to the right place. So what are some of the attitudes, just quick sort of like throw out some phrases, what are some of the attitudes of IT organizations or your IT organization towards Access usage? Anybody? They hate it. Sorry, speak out louder. It ruins data. Stop using it. Kill Access. Anybody else? Any harsher words for the Access team here? Pain in my ass. So maybe it doesn't surprise you, maybe it does. We're super aware of this problem. And it's one of the reasons that over the last couple of years, we've been putting a ton of effort into Access services. What I hope you come away with from this session is some specific action items that you can take to start taking control of Access in your organization. I know some of you have not been to some of the other Access sessions, so I quickly want to just show you a 2-minute video that talks about sort of the prototypical Access services application in our new platform. And so I just want to roll this, just because it'll give you a sort of a good baseline.
While we worked to put the finishing touches on Access 2013, we contacted some businesses to try it out and see how easy it is to create an app that meets their particular needs. During this effort, we contacted Caroline Traub from McKinstry.
At McKinstry, we do building energy audits, looking for energy savings for our customers. We use a lot of different audit tools, loggers, temperature sensors. Right now, they're difficult to locate and track. Without a checkout check-in system, tools get left on site at individual workstations or hidden in the tool room. After doing a web search and talking with colleagues, we couldn't find a simple solution that immediately met our region's needs.
We worked with Caroline, and using Access, created a simple tool tracker app for McKinstry. This is just the type of app we hope users can create on their own, or else they can go to the SharePoint store, download a free Access app, and tailor it to their own needs. A main requirement for this app was that it was easy to use. We want users to come in, check out their tools, and be on their way. The dashboard page has buttons for the most common tasks. We've integrated a barcode scanner to quickly filter to the tool being checked out. Once the tool is checked out, it appears in the checked out list. Bulk checkout can be used to check out many tools at once. Simply scan them in and click the checkout button. Here, a job name can be added. Again, now that they are checked out, the tools appear in the checked out tools list. Simple.
The web app solution was affordable, easy, and ready to implement.
Check it out at office.com/preview. Choose the option for small business to get started.
All right. So McKinstry is this Seattle-based green construction company. Caroline is not a member of their IT staff. She's an engineer. And she needs this application to track the tools in her closet. And that's a classic example of the type of business problem that's important, but not important enough to justify the creation of a full .NET application to solve it. And even if you did create a .NET application to solve it, that's a process that's evolving so rapidly, and it's such an ad hoc process that it would likely get out of date. So you want Caroline to be able to create an application in a self-serve way. And she did that using Access Services 2013, and as you saw, it was based in a browser, and it was backed up not by a Jet database, not even by SharePoint lists, but by a SQL database on Windows Azure. And in a nutshell, that's what Access Services is all about. So with that as sort of an introduction, I want to dive deep into this manageability and this kill access at all costs problem that we talked about. So have you ever heard any of these statements? My hard drive died, and I need to close the deal today. Can you help me recover the data? Or, yeah, sure, the database has customer information in it, and I have no idea what you mean by permissions. Or, yeah, our sales figures, they don't match the other departments because we actually use two totally different sets of data. So that's why our groups are making completely different decisions. So these are relatively common situations that we hear about with access databases. And they arise because there's this tension between agility and manageability. On the one hand, you want to enable your organization to build apps for their business and make the business more efficient and improve the business. On the other hand, it's a big problem when data ends up in an unmanaged place. It creates all the problems that I talked about on the previous slide. And I like to think about this problem with the metaphor of Stratego. Anybody know Stratego? All right. I played a lot of Stratego in my high school years. So Stratego, for those of you who don't know, is this board game where you have a lot of soldiers, only a few of which have any real power. Those are your generals and your colonels. And the idea is you have to deploy those pieces optimally to beat your competition. And it's this way we feel like a lot with IT resources. The number of requests that you get for applications or automation on any given year far outstrips the amount of resources that you have to attack that problem. And so you end up using your generals wisely. You use .NET and Visual Studio and dedicated SQL boxes when you have problems that are customer-facing, when you have large amounts of data, when there's high uptime requirements, so it really needs to be up all the time, and most importantly, when you've got problems that are proven. This problem's been around for years, we know it's of strategic value to the business, and we know it's going to be around for a lot longer time. And if you apply these four metrics to that McKinstry application that we just talked about, it fails on all four. So it'll never get this kind of investment. It really shouldn't. So what happens to those types of applications? Well, we talk to a lot of IT departments in our daily work. And we hear about a number of different strategies. Sometimes folks actually do try to handle all the requests that come their way. But this ends up being spreading like peanut butter, the resources. And the reality is nobody ends up being well served. So that doesn't really work. We do sometimes hear about organizations that provide dedicated SQL instances and .NET to their end users. And the reality is that in most organizations, the end users are just not trained to effectively use those tools. So that doesn't work either. And so most of the time, organizations end up saying, get in line, or they end up saying, no. And this leaves the business units feeling neglected and not getting the attention they need. And so database, and I would also say app and spreadsheet development, it all goes underground. And it happens outside IT's visibility. And really, this is the common state of database and app development and end users today, and it's a terrible place to be. It's terrible because the app development isn't supported by IT. In fact, it's actually trying to go under the radar intentionally. And that means that you're not aware of it. The business users aren't getting any support to do it correctly. But at the end of the day, when something goes wrong with the data, we know who's going to be blamed. Ultimately, IT is held responsible. And so it's a really problematic situation. And we think that there's a better way. We've seen IT organizations partner with business units and both give them advice and infrastructure to do things in a self-serve way. And this probably isn't news to any of you. You're here at a SharePoint conference, and SharePoint is all about self-serve technology. But this old adage, give a man a fish, you have fed him for a day, but teach a man to fish, and you will not have to listen to his incessant whining about how hungry he is. We think that that's kind of applies to this situation. And we think that Access plus SharePoint plus Azure is a great solution here. You get the accessibility and the usability of Access with the great reliability of SharePoint as a web front end backed by a true SQL database in Windows Azure, which is geo-replicated across the globe and has a very, very significant SLA. So you're enabling your users to be agile, but you're enabling them to do it in a managed environment. And that's what this talk is all about, how to do this. So I'm going to give you a step-by-step plan today. First, we're going to find all the databases in your organization. We're going to examine them and figure out which ones are the most important to focus on, because there are probably so many databases in your organization that you can't actually take control of all of them. I'm going to show you two options for taking control of them, and we'll see how those work. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to the Microsoft Discovery and Risk Assessment Tool, which is brand new for the 2013 release. Okay, so this demo requires a pretty heavy bandwidth, and I'm going to show you a video rather than doing the live demo, because as I was practicing it, there was too much blue spinnies. So I've got some videos to show you. So here is, here we go. You know what? I actually prefer Media Player for this. All right. So we're in Windows 8, and we go and we launch the Discovery and Risk Assessment Tool. And the Discovery and Risk Assessment Tool searches through your network to find Access databases and spreadsheets. And here I'm pointing it at a file share just on my desktop. But you can point it at network file shares. You can point it at document libraries in SharePoint. You can point it anywhere. And so what you see here is this is the folder paths, and it's a set of folders that you point the tool at. Here's a set of files that you can look for. Again, I mentioned it can look at Excel spreadsheets and also Access databases, but for the purposes of this talk, we're focusing on Access. It's often helpful to filter down by the modified date. I'm not going to do it here, but it is helpful. The reality is that if a database hasn't been accessed in the last 12 to 18 months, you're probably not that interested in it, and you can run the tool again in 12 months and see if there's anything else that pops up. So what we do is we run this tool, and we calculate the risk. Now, this tool has a super sophisticated algorithm for evaluating the risk of spreadsheets. The Access algorithm is a little bit simpler. It basically looks at the complexity of the database and counts the number of objects in it. So in this file folder, I put about 20 Access databases in there. And now the tool is going to iterate through those databases and calculate the risk score for them. Now, I should say, the tool right now, when I ran it last night and took the video, it was running against cached results, so it's pretty speedy here. In actuality, the performance that I saw was usually about 30 seconds to 2 minutes a database. So if you're running it over a significant set of databases, you'd probably want to sort of set it and go grab lunch or come back the next day and get the results. So what it's doing here is it's looking through all the databases and calculating their risk score. Sure. So the risk score is calculated based basically on the complexity of the database. So it's really just sort of an initial guess at how risky the database is. As I mentioned, for Excel, you can actually configure some pretty sophisticated inputs to the thing to determine the materiality of the database. And I've got Steve here. If you have more questions about that, we can cover that in the Q&A session. In this video, right after this is done, I'm going to scroll over and show you all the information that it's gathering about each of these databases. So what you see here, and I'll just pause the video for a second, is that it's calculating the complexity of the database, anywhere from light complexity up to advanced complexity. And complexity is a score that's calculated just by the number of objects in the database, with some extra little things here and there. So like, it notices tables that don't have relationships or tables that don't have primary keys and sort of elevates the riskiness of that. So our suggestion is that you take this tool, run it against your network, and identify the Access databases that are the highest risk and the most recently used, and then go and tackle those. And so what does it mean to tackle them? Well, there's a product that we're introducing for 2013 called the Audit and Control Management Server. And my next demo is to show you that. Okay, so here's the Audit and Control Management Server. And basically what this does is you point this server at basically, you specify, let me back up. You configure this server to monitor certain file locations. Any changes to files made in those file locations will be picked up by the server, and you get a complete audit trail that shows you all the changes made to the file. So right now, I've got ACM, and it's pointing at a file share on my network. And these are all the files that it's monitoring. And you can see that they're versioned, so that every time a user makes a change to the database, you get a new version of the file, and you're able to diff one version of the file against the previous version. Here, what I'm doing is I'm opening up an assets database that was created in 2003 that's in that monitored file share. And I'm making some changes to it, some changes that maybe some folks might not be happy about. I'm adding the social security number as a field to my employees table, saving the changes. And then I come and I make a couple more changes here. You're going to see that I add social security number to the default form that shows employees. And you're going to see me also create a query called social security numbers. Again, these are exactly the type of changes that you'd like to have some visibility into in your organization. The last thing that I do before saving the database is that I go into VBA and change some VBA. And so you'll see me do that as soon as this saves. In fact, here, let me just advance the video a little bit. There we go. So I'm in the VBA editor, and I'm adding just a comment that says, good thing the boss doesn't know about this. I'm saving the database. And now I'm going to go back to the Audit and Control Management Server and show you how it reports on the changes that I just made in the database. So let's go over here. Okay, so we're back in the Audit and Control Management Server. And that might have been a little, let's see here. There we go. Okay, so I right-click on the file and I say View Audit Trail. And then what this shows me is all the changes that were made to the database between the first version and the second version. So I get an object-by-object description of all the changes. That's the table changes. It shows me that when I added that social security number column, Access also changed the indices, the indexes. That's the employees form. There's the new query that I created called SSNs. And now here's the code. One of the cool little things that the ACM server does is that you can easily compare values, and it launches your diffing tool of choice to come up and show you the diff. So you can see there that I added that comment that says, good thing the boss doesn't know about this. So that, in a nutshell, is this new product that we're releasing called Audit and Control Management Server. If you think that's pretty cool, you may be interested in giving your end users the ability to diff two databases as well. I'm going to quickly show you another tool that comes with every version of Access called Database Compare. Again, launch Database Compare from Windows 8. Point it at the two assets files, the one that before I made the changes and the one after I made the changes. And click Compare. And this uses SQL Server Reporting Services, spins for a little bit. Let me just take it past this and take it to where. Yeah, so here's the report that you get. And this is just a report view of some of the same data that we showed. And it's available to all your end users. You don't need the server installed at all. It's just a small client application. Cool. So if there's any more questions about that, please. Oh, sure. We can take them now.
Does this come as part of the on-prem version too?
Yeah, so Yes, there's nothing about this. This isn't an SPO only thing. This comes as part of the on-prem version. And I'm sure there'll be plenty more questions later. Also, I've got Steve, who's the expert on this technology here, so I may bring him up afterwards to answer your questions about this. But let's, for the moment, go back to the deck. Okay. So what you just saw is that I use the discovery and risk analysis tool, risk assessment tool, to search through all the databases in my organization. And I used this risk score to decide, together with the modified date, to target a particular set of databases that I wanted to manage. And I showed you one option for managing them. You can basically start monitoring them with the audit and control management server. And one of the cool things about this is that the end users who are working on the database don't have to be bothered by this at all. You can just do it. And they can continue working the same way they have always worked. So there's really zero impact on the user. And that's a huge value. I'm really happy about all the access services stuff that we're going to be showing you in a minute. I'm also happy that I can tell you that this is a solution that will work with your organization just continuing to develop access apps the way it always has developed access apps. But I do want to move on to access services right now and basically show you the second option for managing databases. So what I just showed you was a really good solution, but at the end of the day, users are still developing databases in JET. And is that really where you want to go? So on the left here is the computer that I was using in 1997 when the JET Database Engine Programmer's Guide was released. And on the right is Windows Azure and a picture of one of our data centers. And I think you have to ask yourself, do you really want your users building applications in a tool that was designed for that kind of a time period? We've come a long way from then, and wouldn't it be great if your users could easily develop applications on Windows Azure with SQL databases? And that's exactly what Access Services allows you to do. So, before I dive into the demo here, I want to talk a little bit about what it means to manage a database. So, most Access databases are generally separated out into two broad parts. There's the interface, sometimes called the front end of the application, and then there's the data, or the back end of the application. And the management concerns, or the specifications that you need to do for both of those, they're different. With the interface, what's really important is that there's one version of the interface, and that it's your users who use the interface can clearly get to it, and when you have updates to that interface, they can clearly easily get those updates automatically. And that's about it for the interface. The data is a little bit trickier. Again, you need one version of the truth. You definitely don't want multiple versions of the data going around. But it's really important that the data be backed up and that it be permissioned so that only the right users can get to it. So what we're looking for is a solution that manages the interface and manages the data. Okay, so what we're going to do in this demo, I'm going to give you a sneak preview with this architecture diagram, and then I'm going to walk through it. So we're starting with an Access database, like any other Access database. And this is what we're going to end up with. So let me talk about where we end up. We end up with the Access database, the file itself, in a document library. Nobody in the audience is gasping. I know that as Microsoft, we have strongly recommended that you not put your databases in a document library. But I'm here to tell you that it's a fine thing to do if there's no data in the database. If all the data is in linked tables, and the database is really just the front end, just the forms and reports, it's really a fine place for a database to live. That messaging's a little bit hard to sort of get across, so we haven't perhaps been the best at it. But it's really true. So the database is going to end up in a document library with linked tables, not local tables. The linked tables are going to point to a SQL database in Windows Azure. Now, you can absolutely have your customers, or sorry, your users, sign up for their own Windows Azure account and create a SQL database and put the data in there. But why would you do that when Access Services gives you that ability for free, out of the box, with one click? So we suggest that you use Access Services. It's just a lot easier for your end users to use. Another one of the benefits that you get, sort of the cherry on top for using Access Services, is that we're going to automatically create an HTML and JavaScript front end to that data. And you're going to access that using a web browser. So quickly, let me tell you where you end up here. The data's in a SQL database. You still got your Access front end, so all your VBA and your reports that you've invested, you know, potentially decades in, still works. It's in a document library, so that when you want to update it, you can easily update it. But you also have this HTML and JavaScript interface, which you can increasingly move your customers to. All right. So with that as background, let's actually watch it in action. And we'll switch over to the demo machine. Okay. So here's a database called Assets that was created in 2003. I'm sure this looks familiar to everybody in the room, this type of database. What I'm going to do here really quickly is I want to quickly fix it up so that it's compatible with SQL database. For those of you who are familiar with Access Services 2010, when we stored our data in SharePoint lists, this process was very onerous. We had a whole thing called the web compatibility checker. The reality is SQL is very flexible. And so what I'm doing actually right now is optional, but I wanted to sort of just show it to you. In the vendors table, there's a field called state/province. The slash character is not valid in SQL, so I'm going to change it to or. If I didn't do this, it would still all work. It's just that we would automatically rename it, and you'd have to sort of rejoin your forms to point to it. By doing this right now, I get the benefit of Access Name Fix-Up. So Access fixes it up automatically, and there'll be no sort of reconnections necessary afterwards. All right. So now the database is ready to go into, the data in the database is ready to go into a SQL database on Windows Azure. So here is my SharePoint Online site on Office 365. What we're going to do now is we're going to create a new Access Services app for me to pull that data into. And so I'm going to add an app. And if I go to the second page of this, you'll see that there's an option called Add an Access App. So we're going to click that, and we're going to call it the Assets App. We're going to click Create. OK, so what's happening in the background here? We're creating an Access Services app on SharePoint. It's an app just like any other SharePoint app. And we're also going ahead and creating a SQL database in Windows Azure automatically in the back end without you having to do anything. All right, let's see. I should have just named it Access so it would sort alphabetically here. Okay, so let's see, it's still adding. This does take about just a little bit of time, so I'll keep refreshing. All right. The database, is also managed by SharePoint permissions, so that anybody who can access this site with read-only privileges can read the data in the application. Anybody who can access the site with read-write privileges can write the data in the application. And anybody who can access the site with full control permissions can actually modify the application. Let's go in and see. All right, here we go. So here's our app. Now, for the moment, this app doesn't have very much stuff in it, because we haven't put anything in it yet. So in fact, you get this page that says, well done, you've successfully created an Access app, now it's time to start designing. And so what you want to do is open this app in Access to start adding tables. So it's a pretty fundamental piece of Access Services, so it bears sort of digging into. With Access Services apps, the Access-rich client is used as a designer. Think of it as your end user's version of Visual Studio. They use it to redesign the application, but they can use the application inside of a browser. So here's the application. And the first thing that it asks you to do, since it doesn't actually have any data in it right now, is it asks you to add tables. Now, the reality is we've already got our tables. So they're in this other desktop app right here. I'm going to close this, and I'm going to say, create a table from an existing data source. So we're going to go and we're going to point to that assets app on my desktop. And we're going to click OK. Select all the tables and click OK. And so now Access is acting as the arbiter, basically taking the data from that local Access database and pulling it into a SQL database on Windows Azure. I'm very thankful right now that the network is behaving at least seminally today. And we're almost done. Can you drag and drop? I don't think that's supported. The question, by the way, was, can you drag and drop from one to the other? And we have not done the work to stitch that up yet. It's a great suggestion, though. OK, all objects were imported successfully. So what I really want to show you, what's so super cool here is, let me click Launch Application. What this is going to do is take me out of the Access Designer and pop me into the browser and show me the application. And there it is. I haven't done any design here. All I've done is import the tables. This HTML JavaScript application is automatically created for me out of the box. Now, it's a little ugly, and I'll take care of that in a second, but it's pretty cool. And the data's here in a list view. There's a data sheet view accessible from the browser. It's all in a SQL database in Windows Azure. It's all ready for the user to use without any design at all. But let's make it a little prettier. So let's go back into the Access client. Some of these tables just don't deserve being part of the top-level navigation. So I'm going to right-click them, and I'm going to say hide. I'm going to hide depreciation. I'm going to hide maintenance. Hide status, and so all I end up with is three tables, assets, employees, and vendors, and those stars are kind of generic. Why don't I give them a cool icon? So assets can be a computer, and I know there's a computer here somewhere. I know it's here somewhere on the second. Oh, there we go. Cool. And employees can be a picture of some people, and they're right there. And vendors can be a picture of a guy near a board. It's right here. Obviously, there are other choices if you have other preferences. I save those changes, and I launch the application again. And now I've got an application that's cleaned up and much more sort of easy to get my head around, or for my users to get their heads around. I want you to check out one more thing here, which is, we automatically created this control. We call it the related items control, and it's automatically created because we think that relational data is super key to Access. If you've just got a flat list of data, in all honesty, Excel is a much better place for you. Access really shows its value when you've got multiple related tables, and one of the things we do there is automatically create this user experience. So for this iPad, it's depreciation and maintenance history are available right here. And the same thing is true for every single item. You know, it looks actually, let me go and open up the previous application here. It doesn't actually look that different from this. And what's so funny is we've done a lot of work to sort of examine the VBA and the custom logic that folks put into traditional Access applications. A lot of it was to sort of do things like this, like make these kinds of navigations. And we've taken the patterns that we saw most frequently and just made you get them out of the box without any extra effort on your own. OK, so where are we right now? We've got an Access application. We've got a new Access Services application that has all the data from the previous application. But there's probably still stuff here that I'm interested in. You know, maybe I've got some VBA here for automating business processes, and so my users aren't fully ready. Excuse me, let me just go to the browser. They're not fully ready to just use the browser experience. Some of them, at least, need to use the traditional desktop experience. Okay, so let's get that database to have linked tables and get it up into a document library. So here's the database. And this is the step where everybody freaks out. So we're just going to delete all the tables. Because you don't need them anymore. They're now in SQL. All right, done. So Now this is a database without any data in it, and we need to fix that. So what we need to do is actually point this database at the data that's now in SQL on Windows Azure. And to do that, we need to just get the necessary properties to create an ODBC connection string. So we return back to our web application, and we go to the backstage. And right on the info page right here, there's this section called connections. Now, we don't have these enabled by default for security reasons. What I'm going to do here is create an ODBC connection that burrows through the Windows Azure firewall directly to the data. And it's going to have a SQL, it's going to use SQL authentication. So anybody who has this username and password can get at the data. And that's super powerful, and we definitely are happy we're giving everybody that capability. We didn't want to do it by default. So you have to configure it yourself. But it's very easy to configure. All you do is you click Manage, and you say, I want to enable connections from any location. And then you say, I want to enable the read-write connections rather than the read-only connections. And then you say, view the read-write connection information. And this dialog shows you the server, database, username, and password that you use from anywhere in the world to get at your data in Windows Azure. So let's go and use that right now to create linked tables in our desktop database. So we're going to go back to the desktop database, and we're going to choose external data, ODBC database. We don't want to import. That would completely defeat the purpose of this. We want a link. So we click link, and we click OK. The next thing we're going to need to do is choose our data provider. And for that, you need to actually download the SQL Server Native Access Client 11.0 from MSDN. So that's what we're going to use. And we click Advanced, and we specify the properties here. So let me just get this out and make sure that I type these things correctly. All right. So it's the first property is server equals, and then we copy the server. And then the next property is database equals, and we copy the database. Then we have UID equals, we copy the username, which is just the database name with underscore external writer at the end of it. And then we do PWD equals, and we copy in this password. The question was, are you limited to SQL authentication for this, or can you use NTAuth for this? And this here is a SQL database on Windows Azure, which is the way that which is what Access Services uses if you're running on SPO, SharePoint Online. And for that, SQL Auth is the way to go. It's really what you're doing here is you're creating every Access Services application has a unique SQL database for it, but it's in an account that's managed by Microsoft. If you are using SharePoint on-prem instead, and you configure SharePoint on-prem to talk to your own SQL server, well, then you can do anything on it. It's your SQL server, and NTAuth will work on that. So if you're in an on-prem environment, NTAuth is an option. So I've specified all the connection string properties. I click OK, and we click Next. We'll call this the Access App Connection. Click Next, Finish. And let it spin for a second. And then we'll click OK. And we need to paste that password in one more time. Click OK. And now what it's going to come up with is a list of all the tables. Now, there's way more tables here than there are actually tables in the application. What you're seeing here is all the system databases that Access uses to manage the database. We don't need those. All we need is the ones that are prefaced by Access dot. So we need asset categories, assets, depreciation, employees, maintenance, status, and vendors. Whoops. We don't need trace. The trace table is a table that if you're using data macros, you might find it helpful. It helps you debug data macros. If you want to learn more about data macros, there's a session called Diving Deep into Access Services. Happens to be right now, so you'll have to watch it on the DVD. And I want to save the password here. I'm going to put this database on a document library, and I'm going to protect it with SharePoint permissions, so I feel comfortable saving the password into that database. It's going to ask me to confirm that choice, however, for every single table in the database. So. OK, great. Awesome. That is a great question. The question was, why does it do that? Does it do that because you can actually point at multiple places? And the answer is, of course, yeah, you can link tables wherever you want. What I'm showing you here is a sort of a streamlined method just to move one database with data up to SharePoint. There are obviously innumerable combinations of things that would have slightly different paths here. These databases are called access underscore. If I want all the forms and reports to work, I've got to rename them to get rid of the access underscore. So bear with me for just 1 second while I do that. So I rename to remove all the access underscores. Yes, yeah, please. The question was, do I envision the IT department doing this for the user and then turning it back to them? I think so. I mean, it depends on your organization's mileage may vary, but the reality here is my hope here is you've used the discovery and risk analysis tool. You've gotten down to a relatively manageable set of databases that you want to do this to. I don't know what the exact number would be, but it's probably high enough that you wouldn't want to fully rebuild all these databases in .NET, but low enough that you could spend the half hour to 2 hours or so with this process per database to get it done. Certainly the dialogue and the copy-pasting that I'm doing, it's not really designed for your typical IW. This is really an IT scenario. Okay, so I've renamed all those databases, those linked to the tables. And just to show you that they are connected up to the same data, I'm going to open up the assets form. And I'm going to show you, let's see, we'll add some data. So we're going to add a new asset that's maybe called Microsoft Surface. And we'll say that is a great Surface. And we can save that in the web. And maybe add some maintenance, say, on, let's see, maintenance date. I would want to redesign this so that I could actually see the full strings here. And that would just be a matter of going to the designer and stretching them out. But we'll just leave it at that for the moment. And go back to Access here. And what you'd see is that the data, and I'm a little bit surprised, this is demo fail. I'm a little bit surprised that that's not showing up. Maybe it's I just have to close the form and reopen it. When I was practicing things, I always did it in the client and then saw it on the server. So that should teach me for changing things up in front of folks. Yeah, there you go. Thank you, whoever suggested that. You are obviously know more about access than I do. So here you go. Here's the Microsoft Surface with the maintenance performed at 11.1. So these truly are talking to the same data. I've got a minute more of this demo, and then I'll take some questions, because I know you probably have a ton of them. Okay, so I'm going to close this down. We've still got this database here on the desktop. We want to put it in a document library so that it's manageable. And so a great place to put it is actually right next to the application itself. So in a document library here, so we can actually say, in this site, close this, minimize this, we can drag the assets document here, and it uploads to the document library. And so that sort of completes the picture of what I showed you in the slide. Now the network's being a little bit slower. I'll take a question now. Somebody had a question. Yeah. Okay. So the question was about VBA. and whether it goes up via publish. And the answer is that no, it does not go up via publish. So let me just open up the application here so I have these two things side by side. So here's site contents. The app that we create in the browser is a brand new application automatically created. It shares the data, of course, with the previous application, but it doesn't share any of the forms or the VBA with it. And I'm afraid that great question. So the question was, does this replace Access Services 2010? Access Services 2010, let me just open up the app here a little bit. So these are all my apps. Here's the Assets app that I talked about. All right, so now we've got the traditional desktop app here, and we've got the new app right here. And the question was, does this replace Access Services 2010? If you build apps using Access Services 2010, they continue to work. And you can take the data from those applications and move them into Access Services 2013. But yeah, there's no migration story that takes an Access Services 2010 app and automatically moves it with all its logic and user interface into Access Services 2013. It's just you can only do a data migration.
And do you still have the option if you want to publish your tables to SharePoint lists with the other
methods? The question was, could you still have the option to publish your data to SharePoint lists like you did in Access Services 2010? Access Services 2013, by default, uses SQL databases. You can reference SharePoint lists, but the references are, and you can use them as an external data source and join them together with your SQL data, but that connection is a read-only connection, not a read-write connection. So it's intended for reference data, like referencing a document library or a calendar, not for really interacting with lists. Let me quickly continue with the demo, and then I'll have plenty of time to take questions, I think. Okay, so we've got the app here. I also just want to sort of complete the circle here by saying if we click the app here, users don't need to click edit here. They just need to click read only. The reason for that is that they're not editing the application. They're just using the application inside of Access to edit the data that's inside of SQL. So all they need to do is click this, and it downloads the database from SharePoint, from the document library, and they can use the interface as they've always used it. And then also, they can also edit it anywhere they want to with the HTML and JavaScript experience. So let me return back to my slide deck. All right. So what you just saw me do, just to wrap up, to sum up this, I've got more after this. You just saw me take a traditional Access database file, adjust the names to be compatible with SQL. I created the Access Services app on SharePoint Online, and I moved the data into that app. I connected up the existing Access desktop database to use that SQL database data as an external data source, and then I took that database file and put it into a document library. You can, at this point, use either the traditional desktop database or you can use the HTML JavaScript application. We think the HTML and JavaScript is a great way to do it. It's easier for users to get to. They don't have to be running Microsoft Access on a particular version of Windows. It's great for geographically dispersed teams. So we think it's a good experience going forward. So now having done that, I want to just quickly touch on some of the benefits that Access Services apps get for being part of the SharePoint app model that you're hearing a lot about this week. And there are two that I want to focus on. The first is that as an IT person, you can use the app catalog to push apps out to other people in your organization. And I'll show you that in one second. The second is that you get a ton of optics on app usage. And that's one of the real benefits for people using the HTML and JavaScript interface. You will have visibility into what they're doing much more than you do with traditional desktop applications. So quickly, let's take a look at the app catalog. I'm going to return back to my demo machine. And I'm going to go to the Access Services app, which is right here. And remember, this is not the app that we use to read and write the data. It's really the experience like Visual Studio for redesigning the application. But let's say I've built a really cool application here, and I actually want my whole organization to use it. All I do is I do file, save as, and I save that as a package. I'll call this my Access app. And I can choose to include the data or not include the data. I might choose not to include the data if I'm going to push it around the organization and expect every group to bring their own data to it. But for this purposes, I'll include the data. I'll save it on my desktop and click OK. And what Access is doing right now is it's creating a file on the desktop that is this application. Now, it's not an MDB, and it's not an ACDB file either. It's a .app file or a .app file. I don't know how many people here have been attending the sessions on the app model, but a .app file is the new SharePoint app file. Now, if I were to actually open this up with WinZip, what I'd find inside of it, we like to call these files turduckens, because they're really one kind of package inside of another kind of package inside of another kind of package. What I'd find is that this package contains a WSP in it with instructions to set up the SharePoint site, and it contains a DAC pack inside it with instructions to set up the SQL Server. So that's really what this thing is, but we call it a .app file. And now here is my my team site again. And I want to quickly show you the app catalogs. Let's see, Access, which site am I using? MicrosoftAccess.SharePoint.com. There we go. Okay, so this is the app catalog that controls this site. You can think of the app, you would have an app catalog for your entire company or for a per site collection if you're a large company. But it's really easy to go into the apps for SharePoint area here and drag this app file into it. And what I'm doing right now is I, the IT person, the tenant admin, am sort of putting my blessing on this application, and I'm saying, this is something that I want my whole company to use, and I'm putting it in the app catalog so that it'll be available for people who are creating new content in SharePoint. And that there it is right at the top there, my Access app. And so now, let's go back to here. So here's, now it's the end user experience. If they go to add content to their application and they just filter down to apps from their organization, then my Access app is front and center. So that sort of brings you full circle. Now, this is a sort of a workflow that you can use for the scenario of pushing stuff out to your organization. The same thing goes for pushing stuff out to the world as well. This is one of the quickest ways to get stuff into the App Store. You can build an app in Access, save out the package, register for a developer account, and push it up to the store. And that's what you can be submitting content to the new SharePoint store in a day. So that's the app catalog. I also want to quickly show you. Great question, and thanks for helping me connect the two demos. So the question was, is that just the web part of Access? And the answer is yes. So what I just pushed up there, if the user installed it, would just be the web experience. It would not be the traditional desktop database. If you were interested in pushing that out, I bet if you come up afterwards, we could sort of figure out a convoluted way to get that desktop database into the WSP so that it would be deployed. So there's probably a way there, but it's not done by default. I also want to quickly show you the monitoring experience. So this is another site. It happens to be one that's being used a lot back at Microsoft. And this application, I just want to show you the details on it. So every application in SharePoint allows you to do this. This is not an Access-specific thing, but I just think it's a super cool thing from a manageability perspective, because for every application that your users use, you get these statistics on it. You get information on who created it, what version it's on, whether there are any errors that you need to be aware of, and then a per-day graph that shows you usage. So here we know that this application for the last couple of weeks has been used on average by about 40 people a day, and it looks like people are by and large sort of logging in once to do their work and then logging out. There's a sort of relatively one-to-one ratio between launches and unique users. And I think this is really cool because it's such a contrast from what you traditionally get with Access databases, where you really have zero visibility into what's going on. All right, let's go back to the deck here. Cool. So going forward, we think apps are the way to go. We really think that desktop databases don't meet people's expectations anymore for collaboration. They're just people expect to be able to get to data on any device from any computer. And yes, sorry, Steve. Ah, it's a great question. So Steve asked whether there's an automatic mobile story for these apps. Not yet. Gosh, that's clearly something that we're working on. It's something that we know we need. So let's see. So yes, so people expect to be able to access these databases anywhere. It's just no longer acceptable to have them require a certain version of Access running on a certain version of Windows connected up to a file share. And they don't meet your expectations for security and reliability. So going forward, we think you should encourage your users strongly to create apps rather than creating desktop databases. Question was, we published it once, but if somebody wants to redesign it, what can they do? Yeah, it's a great question. All you need to do is open up the AccessRich client. You can redesign it to your heart's content. Anybody who has full control permissions to that site can redesign it. They can go and tweak the user interface. They can add macros. They can add both user interface macros, which run as JavaScript, and data macros, which run as T-SQL sprocs and triggers. There's a ton of customization that you can do to the application once it's up. Totally, yeah. You can redesign this. So the question there was, can you redesign the SQL schema? Yeah, absolutely. You can redesign it in Access. This is the last slide, and then I'll take lots of questions. We're really excited. We're really excited because we're really proud of Access, but we know it's caused problems. We're really proud of that Access helps organizations help themselves, but we know that desktop databases just don't meet people's expectations in the modern world. And so what we've tried to do is create a great way for end users in your organization to create apps as easily as they created desktop databases in the past. And that's why we partnered with the Windows Azure team to create a one-click experience for creating SQL databases on Windows Azure. And that's why we've partnered with Office 365 and SharePoint Online to enable you to build those applications on SharePoint so easily. So we think with Access Services 2013, you can keep your organization agile and keep your data secure. Thanks a ton for your time. I've got plenty of time for questions. Great, yeah, please come up to the microphones. And while you're doing that, let me just talk about the other sessions we've got that you may be interested in either going to or watching on the DVD that comes out. Yesterday, we had our introductory session called Apps in 60 Seconds with Access 2013. We really did build an application in 60 seconds. Earlier this morning, we had a talk called Configuring and Managing Access Services. This is really important. I talk a lot about Office 365, SharePoint Online, and Windows Azure. Everything I mentioned today works just as well against SharePoint on-prem. All you, as the IT person, need to do is to point your SharePoint server at a SQL server. And that talk this morning told you how to do it. This talk is about taming the beast. We also have a talk going on right now about data macros and the deeper experience inside of SharePoint. And tomorrow we've got a talk specifically about moving Lotus Notes applications into Access Services. And I think that's it. We really do appreciate speaker evaluations, by the way. Just put that plug in. I'll take Q&A. I'll just go back and forth, so you first.
If you think about solutions driving adoption.
Yep.
And this could potentially be a different type of solution from a workflow and InfoPath
yep.
situation. Well, there is an advantage to the workflow side of that type of solution. Can you do anything with workflow with Access?
I don't know a ton about that. That's come up a couple times at this conference, and I was talking yesterday with somebody at lunch who said that there's some new workflow stuff that's been released here to be able to run workflow on top of SQL databases. So what I want to say here, and you may hear this a lot during Q&A, is it's just a SQL database at the end of the day. You can get access to it via the ODBC connection that I showed you. So anything that you can do with SQL, you can do with Access Services 2013. Yeah, this one.
You kind of answered the question about on-premise was one of my questions.
So, yep.
So I assume there's just, you don't have to, I realize this might be out of your area, but So you, in 2013, you can just basically say, here's the database to use for anybody who does any access services stuff. Just use the SQL Server if you're doing it on-premise.
And I think the questions are being picked up. So yes, you can basically, you as the IT administrator, point your SharePoint on-prem server at a particular SQL Server, and all the databases will be created there.
Okay. And
Let him finish, and then we'll go.
So the other question was regarding the app catalog.
Yep.
Is that for the whole farm? If you publish it, does anyone, or is it per site collection, or is it?
So the question's about the app catalog and whether it's per farm or per site collection. I think by default it's for the entire farm, but I think you have the option of setting up a site collection, one per site collection. I'm looking down at Kevin and Ari to see if anybody knows precisely. You definitely get one created for every tenant in SharePoint Online. And I think you get the ability to put it out by site collection if you want to.
And yeah. In that example, when you publish it to the catalog and you say, okay, everybody, you now can install this app.
Yes.
But in that scenario, they're all writing to the same database.
Oh, no. That's a great thing to clarify. No, when anybody installs that, they provision a brand new SQL database on Windows Azure.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's not shared.
Okay. And the question about redesign, last question from
you. Yeah.
If you do redesign it, then who gets the changes, though? Can you push that out to everyone again, or can you... You publish it back to the catalog and
If I went and redesigned it, it would be instantly available to everybody. It's just an HTML and JavaScript, page inside of SharePoint Online. Redesign it, it's immediately available.
But if it's published to the catalog, am I creating a separate instance of it? So I may not get the updates?
That is a great question. Yes, you can. That's more complicated. Come up afterwards and we'll talk through the details.
Okay.
Yeah, it's possible, but not easy.
In a multi-user environment.
Yes, okay, multi-user environment.
Whether it be apps or on the PC.
Yeah.
How is locking handled? Is it standard SQL, or did you guys do something differently?
The question is, how is locking handled? And I believe what the answer there is just, it's the last person to change the record wins. Kevin, you know. Yeah, it's whatever SQL supplies.
It's going to be SQL, so you guys didn't do anything else like with the old LDBs and stuff like that. They're all gone. Okay.
Yes. Great question. Thanks. Nothing over here. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you touched on this a little bit, but just to clarify, so if you have a highly complex access services app in 2010, there is no easy migration path. You're looking at essentially rebuilding it or redesigning it in 2013. You can only do a data migration. So,
yeah.
So like, if you have thousands of macros, those aren't going to come over with it, right?
I'm afraid not. If you have thousands of macros, there's not a one quick solution there. The macro stories are relatively similar, so you may be able to reuse a bunch of the concepts that you did. Like, you won't. A bunch of the things we'll be able to copy over pretty easily, but there's not sort of a one button, just move it over.
Okay. The second question is, obviously we have this highly complex apps, and
yeah,
we're running into these situations where users create these monster apps in Access, and then it's something that they can no longer support on their own, so they rely on IT.
Right.
And then we get into this vicious circle again. And so is there any kind of best practice documentation or some kind of policy out there that says, here's when you should go straight in and do .NET versus, try to do something in Access?
We have a document, a white paper, and if you come afterwards, I'll give you my business card and I can make sure you get it. We have a white paper that we released about a year ago that talks about basically your organization's choices of platforms and whether you should use .NET. And there's not a hard dividing line. Like, I can't tell you if you have, 100,000 records, it's in Access, but 100,001, it should be in .NET. But there are sort of like, this document describes sort of the sweet spot of when it should be in Access versus when it should be in .NET. Certainly some of the scalability things and the record counts that previously used to be hard barriers to Access are no longer relevant because we're on a SQL backend.
Okay.
Yeah, so we feel like we've got much more headroom than we used to.
Okay. Last question. You mentioned there was a Lotus Notes session on trans.
There is. Let me go back to the previous slide. It's tomorrow. Moving legacy data systems to SharePoint SQL Azure with Access Services 2013.
Okay.
It's tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. in Banyan ABCD.
Great. Thanks.
Sure. Any other questions? All right, folks, thanks a bunch. I'll be up afterwards. Please come up and chat. I really appreciate your time.